Dr. Ed Cornelia, sports doc, family physician, Metro Health, University of Michigan Health. He'll join us. We'll talk about COVID-19, its impact on sports. It's everywhere in the conversation, also on our daily lives. We'll hear from Dr. K, Scoop Jackson, ESPNChicago.com. Florida's the hot spot for COVID-19, but the NBA hasn't budged on the bubble, and they're moving forward. So we'll talk to Dr. K, also get his thoughts on what Mark Yule said yesterday, executive director of the Michigan High School Athletic Association. If you missed that interview, about where things are at right now in the return of high school sports in the state of Michigan, you can listen on your schedule 24/7 at thehugeshow.net. Mark did say that they hope to have an announcement tomorrow about options based on different scenarios in the state of Michigan. And it comes down to where we're at, what phase. We're in phase four. If we go back to phase three, then there's no sports and there'll be no school if we go backwards. That's basically where we're at. I did notice that cases dropped by almost 250 in Michigan. That's a positive note. Now, the death total says 16, but 13 are from previous records. So there's an asterisk there. So the three would be on the daily, 13 with the asterisk, because it took them 20 extra minutes to release the numbers, normally released at 3 o'clock. But good news that the cases have dropped. I think that's fantastic. And when we look at where we're at with everything connected to this, also in Kent County, where we're based, the cases have also dropped down to 56 new cases, only one new fatality. That's in the Kent County area, which has 657,000 people. A couple days ago, they had 101 cases. It was declared last week a high-risk area, but we're seeing the cases go down. In the state of Michigan, 645. I think we were at 891 yesterday. In Kent County, where we're based, with 106.1 FM and AM 1340, the ticket, our flagship stations, we've gone down almost in half in the last couple of days in cases. As Dr. K said a couple weeks ago, and he said it from the start, you can't live these numbers day to day. But when you look at what we've had the last couple of days about negatives not being reported in Florida and almost 4,000 cases being reported as positive, and the people didn't even take a test in San Antonio, there is a lot of doubt about numbers. What are real and what are media and politically driven? And those stories from Florida and Texas the last couple of days don't help put people at ease. What I do is I look at the numbers in Michigan. And like I said, Kent County in the last couple of days has gone down from 101 new cases to 56. And the death rate has never been accelerated at all in what's deemed a high-risk area in West Michigan. And the cases from yesterday, close to 900 down to 645. That's good news in Michigan. That's people out there social distancing. And I know you may not want to wear the mask, but what we have done in Michigan together has worked. Let's go get an update from Dr. Ed Cornelia, sports doc, family physician, Metro Health, University of Michigan Health, our medical insider. And wow, Dr. K, I know you had a chance to get away for the holiday on a vacation, but COVID-19, back front and center, connected to sports, day-to-day living. I think when you were gone, Michigan was elevated to, or the Grand Rapids region was elevated to a high-risk category. But as I just mentioned coming into you, the cases have almost dropped in half the last couple of days. Good news, statewide cases dropping by almost 250 from yesterday to today. So take me behind the scenes as a doctor, a medical professional in Michigan and based here in Kent County. Let's start with the state. Where are things at?
Yeah, you know, I heard your little intro there, and I agree. It's you know, the numbers, you know, have gone up a little bit, but the key, you're exactly right. I don't think anybody, I hope nobody's doing it on purpose, but the numbers, the daily case numbers is actually the absolute worst tracking thing that we can use, and that's the one that everybody does. Because one, they don't tell the whole story, even if they're accurate, and two, they're not accurate. And so you're really missing, you know, everything if you're just following those case numbers. Looking at hospitalizations, looking at kind of infection rates, the percent positive, again, those are the kind of the two things I look at. And certainly in this area, I just had a call earlier this week with our kind of hospital administration and organization, and in our hospital system here in West Michigan and in the area, there's a little bit of COVID in the hospital, but certainly nothing significant. It's been very, very consistently low ever since the beginning. At the very, very beginning that we did have, you know, some higher caseloads in a few of the hospitals in West Michigan, but that was March. And since then, it has been very, very low. Other places of the country have certainly have had some issues. But West Michigan and Michigan have really, really done a good job of keeping those low. And the percent positives in Michigan stay low, which means that, again, if we have more and more tests, then the numbers are going to go up. But the percentage stays about the same, meaning if you have a bunch of tests one day and not a lot of tests the next day, the number of positive tests is about the same each day. And the hospitalizations and the sick, the very sick, the ICU beds, the ventilator usage hasn't budged. And really that's where you can really, the numbers that come out day to day, whether or not they're in Michigan, the actual case numbers are across the country. Like you said, there's problems with them, the reporting of them, the double counting of them, the counting of people, like you said, who haven't been tested. But what really you can't, hospitalizations and you know, ICU bed usage and ventilator usage, those are discrete numbers. And so if anybody can look at those numbers, those are going to be the most helpful.
So, Dr. K, I listened to you. You're a West Michigan-based family physician, sports doc. You are part of the University of Michigan Health System. That we're told in Lansing this week that Grand Rapids is the new high-risk. The Grand Rapids region is the new high-risk region, but what you tell me doesn't match what I'm hearing from Lansing.
No, it gets difficult when the numbers are so low, because if you have a doubling of cases or something like that, it looks like, you know, a double is a double. But if you double from 50 to 100, if you double from 1,000 to 2,000, those are two completely different types of trajectories. You know, there may be some spots around. I haven't looked at all the surrounding counties, because obviously we have Kent County, which is the middle of our region, or you know, the basis of our region, but they also have some outlying counties. And they use the number, the cases per million, which, again, is helpful in some degree because it kind of helps align. Like, if you don't have a lot of people in your area, then you can tell. If you have a lot of people in your area, it tries to help make those similar types of numbers. But even that isn't really completely accurate because, again, if you have a low number of people and you get a few more cases, it's going to look like your cases per million have jumped way up because you don't have that many people in your region. So, I think any time there's a blip up, you have to watch, you have to look, you have to see where it came from. I don't get the sense, though, talking again to kind of our local kind of medical authorities and, you know, just from what I'm seeing, you know, that it is. Now, things can change quickly. We saw things change, you know, a month ago or 3 weeks ago in other states and where they looked pretty good for a while, like Florida and others. And that changed. So, again, that bears watching. But I'm with you. I don't see anything that really tells me on the ground here, looking at the, you know, actually kind of living a life here in this West Michigan region, that suddenly things have dramatically changed in our area.
So you're telling me ICUs and hospitals are not overrun and haven't been since they had a spike when it began back in March. And the testing positive rate, from what you looked at in terms of data the last time you did, when was that and what was the positive test percentage in this area?
I think it was, you know, I looked last night or this morning and we were below 4%, and it's been between 3% and 4% for the last, I would say 6 weeks, and maybe it's even 8 to 10 weeks. It's been really, really low. We'd like it to go lower, but again, what we're finding too is a lot of those percent positive are, not so much the high-risk group. And again, what we've talked about before, you can be young and you can be healthy and you can have a problem. But we're all, none of us are completely immune to this if we get it. But a lot of the tests that we're getting now, again, back 6, 8, 12 weeks ago, we were only testing sick people because we didn't have enough tests. And now we're testing people who have a few symptoms, or testing people who might have to go back to work. And so we're finding more people who are not that sick but do have the virus. And so that's why I think the cases don't go, or that percent positive doesn't go completely to zero, because there are some less ill people that we're testing now that we're finding. But it stayed very, very low. Across the country, with what has happened around Florida, Texas, California, some of the, Arizona, that percent positive has gone up, and it's gone now. It's about 8% positive around the country, and whereas about 4 to 6 weeks ago, it was probably closer to 4%. But Michigan, since that happened everywhere else, Michigan has not budged. And that's, like you said, a testament, I think, to people doing the right thing, physically distancing and, wearing masks and really trying to, when you're going out into public, doing it in a safe manner. And I do think that number hasn't budged to any significant degree in weeks.
When you read the story out of Florida that a high number of labs all just said positive with no negative, and the San Antonio story of close to 4,000 tests that actually weren't performed, as a medical professional, we as people who read, listen, watch, we form our own opinions, but as a medical professional from a distance, what do you take from that?
Yeah, I hope it's not purposeful. I mean, it's too bad it happens at all. It shouldn't happen, but I hope it's not, some doing it on purpose. But even if it's not, it's too bad, because it doesn't inform us as we move forward. And I've said this every time I've come on with you, I'm going to say it again. I'm really disappointed in not all media, but most media that don't actually dive into those numbers. They just keep putting the ticker up day after day after day, keep shaking their heads, keep saying this is the, horrible, horrible, horrible. And it is. Coronavirus, COVID-19, is a very bad thing that has certainly affected lots of people in lots of different ways. It has caused people to lose their lives, which is tragic and sad. It has certainly caused people to lose their jobs, which is also tragic and sad, and can lead to other unintended medical consequences. So we can't understate certainly the importance of taking this seriously and getting on top of it. But unfortunately, those who are supposed to tell us and help us sort through this, dig through the numbers, are not doing their job at all. And it is just very disappointing, because I think there's a lot of information that needs to be sifted through. And I'm just not seeing it happen right now. It's just disappointing.
I wish they would list cases, critical cases, and then fatalities. I think that would, hospitalizations, the percentage of hospitalizations versus the number of cases, whether it's a hot spot like Houston or Miami or the Phoenix area or Los Angeles County, to really let people know where a true hot spot is, not just a case.
Right, absolutely. They do. They make it sound like everywhere in the country, because they'll say 30 states have seen a rise in cases. And that may be technically correct, because, if last week a state with hardly any cases, say Montana or something, had, for the week or something, 400 cases, and then they had 410, well, that's not a significant change. That's nothing that needs to be reported, but it actually counts as an uptick. And so when you say 30 states, have gone up, well, you really have to look at how much it's gone up. And really, they should be saying, these are the critical states, and this is in these critical states. Here is the ICU bed usage in Houston and in Phoenix, and really helps understand that this is, while it's important everywhere to take this seriously, that the emergent problem that is currently happening, this surge, is not happening everywhere. And in fact, it's happening in a minimal amount of places, but it is very dramatic in those places. But they don't do a good job of really trying to explain that that's not everywhere. Right, that you sort of have this fear of like, I can't go outside anymore because it's lurking outside my doorway.
Dr. Ed Cornelia, he is a family physician, sports dog with Metro Health, University of Michigan Health, our medical insider on the Huge Show across Michigan. What before we move on to 5 minutes on the sports side of this, what's the statewide positive testing rate? You said it's close to 3 to 4% in West Michigan. What is it statewide?
You know, I have to look. I think it's just, I think it's about that, maybe slightly lower than that, but it's about the same. I think the whole state of Michigan has really kind of reached an equilibrium right now. So even though some regions have gone, you know, back, you know, West Michigan region, whatever region six we are, and the Lansing region have gone, you know, to a certain level three, and up north is still five, and I think Detroit is four, and, you know, whatever. If you look at really the numbers, they don't differ a whole lot. I think the north region is still probably lower than that, but other regions are very, very similar in that kind of 3 to 4% positive, and maybe slightly lower, but it's the whole state has really reached a bit of an equilibrium right now.
School. We'll get to the sports side of it. We talked to Mark Gill, executive director of the Michigan High School Athletic Association yesterday. He's waiting on what happens in terms of, you know, face-to-face in school, and if we stay in phase four, you know, in early August and into school starting. Where are you at as a medical professional? Is it safe for kids and the teachers and support personnel to go back inside school buildings for face-to-face learning?
That, you know, that's a tough question. I guess optimistic but trying to be realistic self says yes, that it is, or that it can be. Things need to be done to protect students and protect teachers, and we've talked about this before, particularly the teachers and coaches are probably the most likely to have problems. You know, they're looking at, schools have opened in Europe, and actually that we have not seen spikes in cases over there. They have a different kind of calendar than we do, and they've been back in class, and we have not seen a spike in cases. So I think it absolutely can be done safely. And the most vulnerable are going to be, you know, those younger who have comorbid conditions, but it's really going to be the, you know, those, you know, teachers and coaches who also may have comorbid conditions. But again, I think it can be done. You know, teachers can teach behind plexiglass. You know, masks can be worn. Social distancing or physical distancing can occur. Now, certainly different districts, different areas across the country, it's going to be easier to do than other areas. Schools in big cities with big classes and places like New York where literally they're on top of each other, it's a different than a rural place in Michigan possibly. And so that absolutely has to be taken into account. But yes, I think it can be done safely. There's been models of it being done safely around the world. And again, we know that although, again, nobody is immune, anybody can have a problem, there are young people that can get sick from this, that if things are done appropriately and correctly, that is not the highest risk group by any stretch of the imagination. And every effort needs to be taken to maintain their safety, the student's safety. But yes, I believe it can be done.
Well, what about high school sports, high school football, college football, crossroads on whether they're going to be able to get their fall seasons in right now? NFL is going back and forth to the Players Association. The players want more safety protocols, ability to opt out. Where are you at, medically speaking, on the return of football at the high school, college, and pro level?
Yeah, that gets tricky too. I think it's easier, you know, ironically, it's probably easier at the professional level, although that's where they're, you know, theoretically a little bit older and could be at higher risk because you can create sort of bubbles, you can do testing more frequently. And so you can really, I think, do a good job to try and protect, you know, everybody sort of in the bubble. College, it gets harder again, just because there's different, you know, different divisions, Division 1, 2, and 3 in NAIA, and each of those has their own set of, you know, different circumstances in the schools. You know, in the kind of the Michigan area here, I work with the MIAA, which is kind of Division 3 colleges, and I can tell you from university or college to college, they're different. You know, things that can be done, things are done differently at different places and different resources that each of them have. So it gets a little more tricky because you have to have some sort of a standard. You know, going back to school, if each school district does it a little bit differently, that's okay. But it's hard to have sports when everybody's doing a little bit differently. And because there has to be a minimum expectation of safety. If a team's going to go play another team in the MIAA or even Division I, there has to be an expectation that there's going to be safety. And Michigan State are playing each other in football. You have to understand and you have to expect that they've been tested, we've been tested, we've done everything as similar as possible to make sure it's safe. And then you go down to the high school level and it's even more difficult because, you know, they're certainly, you're not doing, you know, testing and all that type of thing. So it gets trickier because, again, I think it can be safe, and I think that even if I say it can be done safe, there will be people who test positive for it. And if somebody's threshold is no child can get COVID from a sport, then you can't do it. But if the threshold is we need to do as much as we can to limit the spread of COVID to make sure it doesn't happen, but we have to also understand that if we don't have high school sports, that's going to have its own repercussions on the health and fitness and safety and well-being of those who aren't playing their sport. You have to understand that those aren't two separate, they're separate things, but they're not, you can't deal with one without the other. Then you have to understand, or you have to say, okay, what's riskier, playing a sport with COVID possibly, you know, being out there, or not playing a sport with the other kind of health and social ramifications? And that cannot be ignored. That has to be looked at, which is why I think most organizations are doing the best they can to wait as long as possible to make decisions. Because easy thing to do to just to say, no, it's not happening, we'll revisit this January 1st. But I think everybody understands that there are issues if you don't have sports that aren't just as simple as, hey, I can't go to a game Friday night. There are implications for the health and well-being of our student athletes if we don't have sports, and that has to be recognized.
From a medical standpoint, and you look at a school district, the risk, and I think that's where we're at now. Just like when we got close to the players reporting for the bubble or major leaguers reporting to ballparks, there was a lot of angst, anxiety about a system. And what you have is that these schools and these high school teams don't have the resources of Major League Baseball or the NBA, or the NFL, or even Michigan or Michigan State, who have really done a fantastic job with their student athletes since early June in terms of testing and safety. So I know those vaccines are out there and they're moving at record warp speed. And hopefully, who knows, by the end of the year, you know, there could be a vaccine. We don't know. But man, I just think with the contact sports of football, and I said this to Mark Uhl yesterday, Dr. K, and I'm just looking at more like spring for high school football. In college football, they can protect those kids. It's different. But at the high school level, I really think football or any true contact sport, which would be probably lacrosse, won't happen until next spring. That's my guess.
No, and I think that's a very reasonable approach to take. I think you're exactly right. There's risk. I'll be on a conference or a lecture tonight across the country. I'm talking about return to high school sports, and I'm sure we'll talk about this. But there's different risks for different sports, and football is the highest risk category. And so that may be something that's harder to do where other sports are able to go in the fall. I completely agree with that.
Well, what is interesting, Dr. K, and I talked about this yesterday with Mark Uhl, and that interview, for anybody who wants to hear it, on the return of high school sports in Michigan is available 24/7 at thehugeshow.net. That I've been to a Little League game. I've watched my son go to a Barone soccer camp. I have sensed, and I've gotten this feedback from Jim Comperoni from Spartan Mag, who coaches his kids in a travel baseball. And even Mark Uhl was saying he's gone to travel baseball tournaments out of state, that there hasn't been this angst or worry from parents or major outbreaks. I know we had a camp in Missouri, but we have not read these alarm stories connected to anything with kids, for the most part.
Correct. No, I had some elite or some travel baseball kids in the office this week, and I said that to him. I said, so you've traveled, they had some tournaments in state, they had tournaments out of state, and I said driving distance and so forth, and I said, have there ever been any issues? You know, have you been told after you've been at a tournament, hey, someone tested positive? And they said, no, we haven't yet. It doesn't mean it can't happen, but you're exactly right. When you look at where these cases still are coming from, and again, in Michigan, they're still a very low amount, continue to be a low amount, but even in the hot spots, they're not coming from, high schoolers it's college kids, unfortunately, getting together. Unfortunately, still nursing homes to some degree and that type of thing. But no, I've been, and baseball is an easier one. We talked about this months ago. What is one of the first sports that probably could come back? And we said, well, golf, obviously, and NASCAR, because there's certain really distancing that goes on there, but real distancing, I should say. But baseball was one we thought could, and that seems to actually be going quite well. Even soccer in Europe to some degree, certainly at the professional leagues, but I think at lower levels as well. So that's why I said there's a model. It can be done, but there is risk, and you have to understand that there's risk. But there's risk in everything we do.
It will be interesting. From NASCAR, they allowed 30,000 fans in the Motor Speedway with social distancing, And I think that Speedway holds over 100,000, but it's like 25% capacity. We'll see if there's an outbreak when those fans return to their homes in Tennessee or the South or wherever they go back to. If, you know, NASCAR, because there's no interaction with the drivers, they're in bleachers. I watched where families, some of the footage, all sat in a row. Then there was 6 feet. So it looked like it was well organized. And I think that was a big test for sports last night.
Absolutely. You know, we have to use, like I said, any of these events where people are getting together, either planned or unplanned, we sort of have to use, you know, to see what happens, a little experiment to see what happens. I'm with you. It'll be interesting to see over the next, you know, it's going to take 2 to 3 weeks, but the next, you know, couple, 3 weeks of what happens.
So right now, high school sports, would you say outside of football that and maybe lacrosse, that the high school sports, it would be safe for any parent to have their kids play a high school sport?
I think so. I think understand, you know, where we're at now, and we, again, you know, the caveat every time we talk to is also we have to see what happens over the next couple of weeks and then as we move forward. But yes, there's risk. But I think what we're seeing from around the country and around the world, that the risk is very low. It's not zero, but it's very low. And, you know, I think if you have certain medical conditions or, you know, you have to watch someone who has very bad asthma as a child or something else, you know, lung-related in particular, I think I'd be cautious with. But I think by and large, we see there's ways that it can be done safely. And so I'm hopeful for lots of different reasons that some fall sports will occur. But it may not be, like you said, it may not be football.
Dr. Kay, good to hear your voice again. Good to have you back. Thanks for the insight on COVID-19, its impact on sports and our day-to-day lives. And we'll talk next week.
Sounds good, Bill.
All right, Dr. Ed Granolia. He's a sports doc, family physician, Metro Health, University of Michigan Health. And from social distancing to everything you need to know about COVID-19, go to metrohealth.net. You'll see the COVID-19 banner. Or if you have any sports medicine questions, go to metrohealth.net and click on sports medicine.